Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. Hold on a second, let me adjust the mic. Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. Hope you guys are doing good. The show is sponsored, as always, by SavageClassical.com. That's S-A-V-A-G-E, classical.com. You can go there. Richard Sage will be your guy. Just tell him that I sent you and take a look at some of the most beautiful instruments on the East Coast. That's SavageClassical.com in Long Island. Tell him I sent you. All right? Today on the show, we have Fred Hand. Fred Hand is, of course, my old teacher, if you listen. I got my master's at Manus, and he was there. He just retired this year. Congratulations to Joao Luiz, who's the new, who took over for him. And, you know, he's got a lot to say about it. I think he wanted to come on the show. I think he wanted a space like this to talk about his experience. And it was, we had him doing like a little promo for the album that he released, a very beautiful album of his own pieces, some of which are from a long time ago. Some of these recordings have been like kind of a remastered situation or a, I don't know, he explains it. But he really wanted to come on, and I was hesitant to have someone on for the second time. This show is all about having purpose. You come on once, and then if you want, you can, you know, you can buy an ad spot or something if you have something you want to promote. But I try not to have people on twice just because I don't have people on that often. Anyway, you know, I was talking to Fred and we did that little ad spot, hit the record button to turn it off. We stopped recording, in other words. And we talked for like another hour and we were like, we should, you know, this. Yeah. I go, why don't you come on again? So now you're going to hear from him again. And we don't talk about the same things. We don't give you his origin story or anything like that, who he studied with, how he grew up, what his favorite foods are. That's all in the first episode, which is like 10 years old. So go and look that up if you want to know about Fred. But if you want to know about what Fred and I think about just sort of the state of education and what else do we talk about? You know what happened is that he, right before I got on with him, not 3 minutes before I got on with him, I got a text from a friend saying Queen Elizabeth had died. And Fred lived out there. You know, he studied with Julian Bream. And, you know, I talked to Fred. I go, hey, you know, the Queen just died. And he goes, yeah, it's very sad. And I go, you know, is it? I immediately took on this shitty American hipster attitude of that it wasn't, you know, who cares? So immediately felt bad about it. I don't know if it's in the recording or not. If it is, I'm just going to take it out because I think I sound like an asshole. And not realizing the fact that I love England. It's my favorite vacation I've ever taken. That I don't, I mean, you know, and Fred sort of set me straight. He was like, you know, she lived a life of service and she really did. You know, I was listening to a show. She was the Queen of Pakistan when she, we don't understand the depth of her reign. We just watched this stupid movie about Diana. Not that Diana was stupid or anything, but it's Kristen Stewart, Twilight actor, doing Diana. And, you know, she's walking around in this malaise because she's so wronged by Queen Elizabeth. And, I don't, you know, after you look and you read about her and you do a little read, it's amazing what she did. It's amazing what she had sort of reigned over. So my condolences to the people of England. It's a huge loss. But you know, the attitude we have over here, I don't know. It's like people really like to just sort of, you know, immediately like or dislike something. And it's always easier to dislike something, but I'm not saying England's perfect, but you know, Christopher Columbus, he wasn't English. That's the thing about my little neighborhood here is that it's okay to date like Italians and people from Portugal, but it's not the worst. If you have an Irish boyfriend, you're like you're a loser. So anyway, I'm just you know, I'm just saying. Condolences. She was an outstanding queen. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with this with old Chuck there. Chuck the Third. Anyway, I don't know why I'm talking about this. I've got so much more going on in my life personally. I had a big time at camp. I was there for 2 months. Outstanding. It's, you know, it's I, my staff, the staff that was under me, the counselors, unbelievable group of young men and women. Unbelievable. I had two guys and two girls, and we just, I mean, we just killed it. They killed it. Congratulations to them. I don't know if they're listening. Probably not. They're in their 20s. They're too busy. But it was you know, an amazing experience as usual, very draining. We got to see, because now I'm getting married. That's right. I'm packing it in. But before I talk about getting married, we'll get back to it. The 6th annual Florida Guitar Festival is taking place. Do you guys like how I'm throwing this? I think it's fun for me to throw this in right in the middle of this. I mean, some of you don't give a shit, but a lot of you do that I'm getting married. Okay, what's happening? The 6th annual Florida Guitar Festival is happening. When? It's happening on Friday, October 21st, and it ends on October 23rd. So don't show up on October 24th asking them where it is. All right, so it's at Florida State University's College of Music in Tallahassee, Florida. You know, this is a little oasis of culture. I'm just joking. All right, Isaac Bustos, Alec Holcomb, Silvio, and he told me not to pronounce this, Chuli, and 2021 competition winner Arturo Bedoya, Adam Holzman, others. You make sure that you go to their website and find out who else is there. I'll tell you about the website in a second. It's the worst read. I haven't done this for several months, so bear with me. Why is this happening? Well, it's happening because the festival will be celebrating Bruce Holzman's, brother of my teacher, Adam Holzman, Bruce Holzman's 50th year as a professor of guitar at Florida State University. The weekend will include concerts, lectures, flamenco workshops, dozens of guitars to play and buy, and a competition with multiple divisions. For more information, please visit floridaguitarfestival.wordpress.com. Don't go to floridaguitarfestival.com. You won't find anything. And what you will find, the FBI may have to investigate. floridaguitarfestival.wordpress.com for more information, or just go ahead and email them. Just shoot them an email. floridaguitarfestival@gmail.com. Ben's your guy over there, Dr. Ben Lawfeed. Did I say it right, Ben? I hope to meet you one day. Anyway, make sure you do that. And I'm getting married. And that's what's going on. So Liz Koff is her name. She's, I've known her. We've been dating for 2 years, but we had a little thing a couple of years before that. So really I've known her for like almost 4 years. You know, we lived in the same neighborhood, and she ran into me at my birthday 2 years ago. And I was actually talking to her friend, and she kind of butted out and said, "Don't talk to this guy; he's a bad guy." And she ended up just kind of sticking around. So I don't know if I told this story or not. I don't like to talk about dating. I got into trouble for talking about someone that I was dating on the show. She was like, "You know, we don't even really know each other." And I was like, "You know, you're right." So I don't really talk about the relationship stuff as much as I used to talk about it like crazy, right? Anyway. So Liz, and then she kind of, but she was telling me not to look at her, not to talk to her, but she wasn't moving. She wasn't leaving my area. And so I knew I had an in, and I took it, and we ended up matching again on the apps. This is an app. We met on an application, and and then we moved in with each other in February, and it's been magical ever since. Except for the 2 months that I had at camp. And I took those 2 months and I was thinking about it a lot. And Liz was real sad that I was gone. And she was saying things like, "You don't even sound like you care." And I was okay because I knew I was going to ask her to marry me. So like halfway through camp, I'm just like, all right, well, you know, I'll deal with my relationship when I get back, because I felt very confident in it. Not realizing the fact that, you know, I had this sort of laissez-faire attitude about things because I knew what was coming around the corner. And anyway, I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if any of the story makes sense, but I'm very excited about it. You know, I didn't know if this was going to happen for me or not. We're talking about kids. I'm 45. Well, myself and a lot of my friends and parents, listen, can you hear that air conditioner? Hold on a second. Let me just get that. I want to get this done in under 10 minutes. I just passed the mark. All right. We'll see how that does. Not a window unit. I don't know what you call it. It's a big machine robot that is on the wall here. But yeah, she's wonderful. She's beautiful. She's smart and warm and really sensitive to what's going on around her. She's an excellent designer and really talented with space and form and she's excellent at pottery. Everything about her is really perfect. She's got a great family too. She's got the first dad who's a liberal that I've ever dated. Everybody else has been a conservative dad. And I always have to sit there and like smile and nod politely when he talks about Reagan, not her dad. And we aren't having a wedding, which is, I think at first was much to the chagrin of our family. You know, we're dealing with four retired parents on her end and mine. All of them are alive, which is, you know, wonderful. But, you know, they have questions, they have demands, not really demands, but just preferences. They want to be kept in the loop when so we're having to sort of, you know, compartmentalize and create boundaries. But I love them very much. Everybody's very excited and I'm excited. My family never wanted to come back to New York and now we're demanding that they come back. Liz's family is from Massachusetts. So they're all going to meet and it's going to be in a family only dinner at this wonderful restaurant that we like very much. It's called Rule of Thirds and it's going to challenge some members of the family. But it is New York and I think that if you come to New York, you should have something that's special and that you probably couldn't get in Boston or something, or, you know, Chicago or something like that. No offense to Boston or Chicago. You guys have the best food. Yes, absolutely, 100%. But you know what I'm talking about. This is like a... There's a difference. Anyway, I'm excited to have my family out, my niece, nephew. It's going to be great. Thank you for sticking with me for the last... What has it been? I think old Wendy and I... Love old Wendy. Told her she's excited for me. So, you know, that's... You know, if you don't know, I dated her for 15 years and we broke up about 7 or 8 years ago. And ever since then, it's been up and down. It's been crazy. Dating in your 40s is a particular hell. And I think it's over. So thanks for putting up with my immature, you know, rantings about that. And let's get on with the show. Thank you. If you want to, go to the registry, just without doing that, just go to brettwilliamsmusic.com/support. That's brettwilliamsmusic.com/support and help out me and the coughs. We can take a little weight off of this poor father of hers. It's brettwilliamsmusic.com/support. Maybe I'll get Liz some flowers or something. Okay. I appreciate everybody. Thanks for listening. Sorry for being gone for so long. And here's my time with Fred Hand. Oh, wait, before I do that. Oh, okay, I did. No. Here's my time with Fred Hand. I thought I didn't read the thing about Florida. I did. Go to the annual Florida Guitar Festival, October 21st through 23rd. Go to savageclassical.com. Go to brettwilliamsmusic.com/support to help me out, support the show. Here's my time with Fred Hand. I don't think we're all like that, but I think there's sort of like an anti-imperial sort of sentiment that's not just going throughout us,
very
but going
different,
throughout
perspective.
Yeah.
Both my wife Leslie and I, we're big, big fans of Queen Elizabeth, and not just Queen Elizabeth, but we've gone deep into the history of the monarchy and the role of the monarchy, and even in England as we speak, it's still controversial. Like, what do you need a queen for? But you know, what I can say about that is just simply what a beautiful thing that she didn't want this job and it was bestowed upon her as a 23-year-old something. She had just gotten married. And the whole thing, the whole gig is to serve others. And she did that for 70 years. You know, that's incredible. And in all seriousness, because I know we joke a lot, that's really what it's all about. I've concluded at the this age that I've arrived at, it's really about helping others, you know?
That is true. And most of the people who I respect in our sort of little industry here feel that's something Matt Hensley said. He said, once you start sort of stop thinking about what you can get and start thinking about what you can give this you know this instrument, that's when things start to open up. That's when people start to listen. That's when they start to respond. And that's,
Yeah,
is that
and I
what you
think
think?
that's I agree with that, and I think there's something else that just by doing that in the moment that you're doing it, and I should say moments, you know, that you're doing that, you are connected to another human being or human beings, and that is so much more enlivening than thinking about yourself or doing things just for yourself. It really is. And well, you know, it's not really that much different in a way than making music. When you make music, you join something that's larger than yourself. And then to actually play music for others, you're sharing it, that widens the circle, okay? But it doesn't have to be music. You could be doing anything for someone else. You could be just listening to them talking, and that alone is making a connection that is more than enlivening, enriching your life and enriching their life. We need each other. That's the truth of the matter.
It is true. And that's kind of what I discovered with the show. I think I started it with not ulterior motives, but I was younger. I was going through a major sort of career change with the dystonia setting in and all that stuff. And I wanted some way to sort of stay in the game was sort of,
Yeah,
I guess,
sure, of
not the
course.
original thing, but I was just thinking, what can I do with my skill set, which was podcast. And then what I found was, is I found out that more of what I got out of it was, yeah, just the connections with other people, the personal connections. I never really use those connections, or I try not to use them too much for like commercial gain or to get a concert or whatever. But the most I get out of it is these conversations and just sort of the connections we make with each other.
Absolutely.
And by the way, this is the
Absolutely.
first time I've done this in about 3 months, so I'm all over the place.
And that's why I
I'm
love
I'm
you. That's one of the many reasons I
Tell
love
me about NPR. What was it? What do you
you.
think about that format? I mean, how did it feel as a
Well,
song? I
it's
mean, you've done
interesting
it
that you should
before.
ask, because that was done with a wonderful host named Julie Armacher, who was terrific, and she really did her homework. Meaning, I was doing this these types of shows to promote a new album, which I'd like to promote here too. It's called Across Time, and it contains not only recent works, recently composed, recently recorded, but also re-releases of works that I did, recorded 40 years ago that were released on vinyl, you know, and then never saw the digital age. And then stuff in between that I recorded in my home studio that had never been released. So I had been doing a series of these things. But what was unique, I think, about the Julie Armacher interview, I think it's called Classical Tracks, by the way. It's available now as a podcast, is that she really researched the album, meaning listened to the album and asked me insightful questions about each piece. And I would, when she edited the whole thing together with the music, so for instance, I would in the interview be saying, so when I use this tuning, it enabled me to play up high on the guitar and yet have open strings. And just at that moment that I'm saying that in the interview, underscoring that is an example of that, you know, like of me doing that. So it was very, I thought, very skillful, as opposed to just simply playing, you know, whole tracks and stuff like that. It was really edited very thoughtfully. So that was different. And then with Sirius Radio, what was interesting is that we have a new format. Instead of interviewing you, it's your show. You're the host. You'll be the DJ. And we want you to, of course, play your own album, but also we want you to play music that inspired you to write the music that's on your new album. So I play, for instance, the middle movement of the Ravel Piano Concerto. And I play Dave Brubeck, not about Blue Rondo a la Turk, because that's very much how I came up with the third movement of Trilogy, which is, you know, it's right from there. It's like very clear that that's what influenced me. So that was fun to do. I had never done that before. And
That's
then
cool.
now here we are. So this is the pinnacle. I feel that I've done these things All of this was in preparation for this moment with you.
Were you nervous doing all those things? I mean, was it a little nerve-wracking? Because
I would say a little bit, but Julie had just a very easy way, as do you, by the way, of making someone feel comfortable. So I was comfortable. I was a little more nervous initially with being the DJ.
that would scare me. I would feel like, oh, am I being interesting enough, or am I, I don't
Well,
know.
so what they do is they do have a script because they want you, because for one thing, they said when people are driving in their car listening to this, we don't know when they're tuning in.
Yeah.
So after each musical thing, you have to say, "This is Frederick Hand. Welcome to Sirius Radio, Classical Symphony Hall, whatever it is." And so I had that script, but the challenge was not to make it sound canned,
Yeah.
to say it in a spontaneous way. And then they had certain directions about, like, you play this piece and then you talk about it. And they had certain things to talk about, but they said, "We don't want you to script it, so speak extemporaneously." And that actually is the best way to do it. I don't like working off a script because it's canned, I'm much more comfortable talking spontaneously.
Well, it's difficult to, when I've had to write scripts a little bit here and there for certain things I've done with this show, and it's when it's an extended amount of time, it's pretty difficult. I did that music history podcast, and I scripted that, and I'll tell you, man, the amount of work that goes into writing a script that flows and that sounds natural, I mean, it was a major undertaking, and it's a big reason why I had to stop doing it. I just didn't have the time to write the scripts. I had the time to do the research. I had the time to sort of wrap my brain around some of the events and the things we were talking about. But it was just a matter of the actual script writing is something that only I could do out of all the people that were involved, and I couldn't find anybody else who could do it. So it's really, yeah, it's a whole different monster. I think it's really hard to write a script.
It is hard, and I have one little story to tell you that quite some time ago, I did a series of teaching videos for a wonderful company called Homespun. The owner of the company is a wonderful folk singer, actually, named Happy Traum. He used to have a duo with his brother Artie, Artie and Happy Traum. And anyway, Happy, so he was the one that actually got in at the ground floor with the teaching videos. And at first, he started off doing what he knew, which was folk music, and then he enlarged it to jazz and classical guitar and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, he asked me to do a video that would be comprehensive teaching the classical guitar to a beginner, So I had to really think about how one would do that, because most of my teaching, my career, in fact, almost all of it, was at the college level. So I had to really think about, if you were starting someone off at the beginning, what would you show them about your right hand, and what would you show them about your left hand, and about sitting, and about you filing your nails, and all this stuff. Not to mention later on we get into musicianship. And I did a ton, as you were talking about writing a script. I wrote a script, and I wouldn't be able to read the script on camera, so I had my wife Leslie write these giant cue cards, and holding one up from the other. And I started to do this, and about, I'm going to say, less than 10 minutes into this whole project, Happy Tram comes out from the booth and said, "Fred, stop, stop. We're not going to do this."
Yeah, we're not gonna do
I
this.
had just you worked on this for like 6 weeks, right? He said, "We're not going to do this way. Here's what we're going to do. What's the first piece you're going to play?" He says, "You're going to play that piece, and as you're playing the piece, you're going to talk about what you're doing," and which I was totally unprepared to do. And it was like the biggest, curveball. But he was so right, because what I was doing was like a talking head, just talking a lot and talking a lot. I said, "No, we don't want that." But my point is that all of the research that I had done and all of the thinking about how to present things, then I was able to do it in a very spontaneous way. And so what I'm saying is that, sometimes we think, so that was all a waste of time that I did all that. No, you have
Never.
to do all that. But then I think the best thing is then to be able to trust, and that's the key, is that you have to trust yourself to be able to summon it up spontaneously. And when you do it spontaneously, you're going to miss some stuff. Like I remember, like in that first video, I was talking about the fingernails and the shaping of the nails.
Yeah.
And I said, now the thumbnail, I said, that's a whole other thing. We'll get to that later. I'm going to devote a whole thing on the thumb. Well, of course, you know, an hour into the video, I'm not thinking about the thumbnail. So the video comes out and I'm getting emails. Hey, what about the thumbnail? I never got to the thumbnail.
No, but that's not, you know, that's sort of the thing is that, well, I mean, it's, I guess it is important to some people. I mean, to a lot of people, but really, yeah, I you're never going to get it perfectly when you're.
No. And I, you know, that's a good thing to think about in whatever the endeavor is. Like, think about playing a piece of music. It's never going to be perfect, you know, unless you make a recording and then you can edit it and do what you want. But you have to accept that what perfect is, you know, perfect can be, someone very wise once said to me, perfect can be used as a beacon or a bludgeon. I never forgot that. You know, as a beacon is something to shoot for, you know, as a standard, mm-hmm. or to just beat yourself up. Oh man, that wasn't perfect. You just messed that up, you know?
Yeah. And nothing in between. Yeah, nothing in between you're going
to
find
nothing in between.
With.
Right, yeah. Exactly right. Yeah.
What about, you know, as far as like your playing and stuff, are you going to be doing any shows or anything like that?
You know, I don't.
I know
have
that you haven't been focused on that for the last, you know.
I haven't. Year I haven't. Two, but... I did a right before the pandemic. I did a concert at CUNY Graduate Center of all my original music, and I hired chamber musicians, and I did all that. And you know, I have been writing more music. I just finished a big piece that I dedicated to Ben, my dear friend Ben Verdery, and it's unlike anything else I've written. It's a theme in variations. But the style of it is, for me anyway, kind of dark and a little bit, I would say, twisted, which you could certainly relate to.
I can't. I don't write dark and twisted music that
I don't either. I don't either, which is why when I was doing it, I said, who's writing this? And I was like every day, like, I'm dying to see how this comes out because I had no idea. I'm not kidding. One of the things, though, that enabled me to get that kind of... I'm going to call it a new sound, but I mean a new sound for me. It's not that it's so novel, you know, in the world, but was oddly enough, I always, of course, you know, you know this because you study with me. I always have my E string tuned to D because I love that added resonance, but I tune the G string to F sharp, which is a lute tuning, you know, but I didn't use it like a lute tuning. I used it to get chords in fourths, different kinds of, you know, diminished fourths and stuff like that. That it was none of this was planned. It was just like I found these beautiful sonorities on the guitar that I never found before, and that open F sharp ringing was one of the key elements in adding dissonance to it.
You know? What gave you the idea? Just so you had the drop D, so you figured let's put it in the key of D.
I've written some a few other things with that. Of course, I played the lute, so I was very comfortable with the tuning.
Well, the G is also one of those strings that, you know, if any guitarist knows is the most problematic.
Totally problematic. Yeah. Absolutely. Because I think this is only my theory because I'm not old enough to know this, but when they used to use gut strings, I'll bet you that the G string wasn't that tubby sound that, you know, you get now with a nylon
right.
G string. Although now I use a carbon G string, which is not... perfect in the sense it's perfect in intonation, but it's not as warm, but it's also it's not tubby, so I'll gladly trade that off.
What's the point of that thing? I always get that thing, you know, on accident when I get straight.
What thing are you talking about?
Carbon G string,
clear strings, but they're made of fluorocarbon instead of nylon, and they don't have that kind of tubby sound.
Sure.
And there are also every company makes a carbon string now, and a lot of guitarists use just carbon straight through, you know. But I don't care for that on my guitars. I like the nylon string. I'm talking about the trebles E and B, and then a carbon third string. You can get it. D'Addario makes one. Pyramid makes one. Most companies make a carbon string, and they're slightly. They all sound a little different.
You what know? Are you playing? What kind of strings do you use?
Well, mostly D'Addario. Yeah. However, I recently got a new, it's not a brand new guitar. I got a used Antonio Marin, you know, Spanish Granada guitar. And I've experimented with different strings on there. And while the D'Addario strings sound beautiful, the Hanebach high tension trebles are, are the sweetest strings on that guitar. You know, I've only used them on that guitar, but that's my favorite. And on the basses, I use the Dario. You can use any number of things. I'm usually, you know, the basses will range from being brilliant, which I don't really care for that much, like super brilliant, to toned down. Like, for instance, the Augustine blues are much more sedate. And for recording purposes, I really like that. I like it when strings are a little deader. They're not just, you know, blasting and overtony and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think you had talked about that once. You kind of like, was it, I don't know if it was you or if it was one of the other teachers that was talking about using old strings in recordings.
Yeah, I'm not, well, what I used, yeah, and I still do that. I will, if I have a recording coming up, I will take strings off the guitar. I have to remember not to clip them too short so that I can put it back on. And I'll, we're talking about the bass strings now. The treble strings, you want, you know, fresh strings.
I think so. Otherwise, they sound scratchy. Yeah.
Exactly. But the bass strings, I take them off and then I wash them with isopropyl alcohol to get out all the dirt. And I even reverse them is also a good thing to do. But they're not new strings anymore. So they have a little bit of life left, but the grooves are kind of worn down. And that's, see, like these semi-polished strings, that's what they do. They ground down the grooves and it makes the string a little deader. But the trade-off there is sometimes they can be a little too dead, you know?
Well, that's what I have. I accidentally ordered 20 of them because I'm sponsored by Didara. So Didara is going to be happy because we're talking so much about them. But I accidentally ordered those and I was so pissed off because I got them and they were all worn. I had no idea what was going on.
Did you order them online? I'm just curious now because
ordered them online through their thing.
So you accidentally, where it said semi-polished strings, you accidentally said, yes, I want these semi-polished strings.
I was like, hold on, I'll be right there. And then I ordered them. And now I've got these strings. But then I ended up using them on these videos that I made recently. Mm-hmm. They sound great. They sound beautiful in the recording. There are a lot less of that. You don't get as much of that.
I've used them many, many times for recording.
Squeaking, it's great.
Yes, it is great. You can play with without fear of that horrible.
But I think live it wouldn't be as much fun because you weren't getting any of that projection.
That's right. But I remember doing way back when doing a session on relatively new bass strings, and I did one of the most horrible squeaks you can imagine shifting up the guitar, and we stopped the take and I said to the engineer, was that bad, that sound? He said, no, it sounded like he was sawing the guitar in half.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I think the first time I realized it was a problem was with a girlfriend I was with, her teacher. She was a singer and I was like at Vanderbilt and she was singing and her teacher was like, that sound. And I had no idea what she was talking about. All she was talking about was like, you know, fretboard. What is it called when you're moving your fingers?
Squeaking.
And I was like, oh, well, there's, you know, we don't really address that much. We don't even think about it that much. And then on this last recording that I made, I ended up having this one section that I just went over 1,000 times, went through all the takes, tried to re-record it. And when I re-recorded it, it was just, the note was so cut short when I tried to get rid of it that I just kept it in there. But it's
right. They have now programs, by the way, to de-squeak. I don't know if you know that.
No, like a filter sort of thing?
Yeah, it's a filter. And what they do is, like any filter, they get the frequency of the squeak.
Yeah.
And then they knock it down. I actually used it in some things on this my new album. I found that...
what did you think?
It didn't remove the squeak altogether. But what it did was it took the prominence of the squeak. It put it in the background rather than in the right up front. So
that's good.
I think that stuff is good. Anything that makes it, I have a different philosophy about recording than some, which is that I compare making a recording to the difference between going to see a live show, let's say a Broadway show or any kind of theatrical production, and then or comparing that to a movie.
Right.
So one is a live performance and whatever happens, happens. And there's the energy of it being live, which is incredible. And seeing it, making it, being made as you're watching it. And in a film, they sometimes shoot out a sequence, you know, and they edit it and shoot it in different angles and all this kind of thing. And they get exactly what they want, you know. And I don't see any reason in today's world, digital world, with incredible digital editing, and not for the recording to be exactly what you want.
It's supposed to be a record of intent, you
Yes,
know? Yeah.
it's a different art form. I'm a little disconcerted by in my box now it says mute. You're hearing me though, right? Because why is it a blue box and it says mute?
A blue box that says
Yeah,
mute.
off to the side it says mute. Now let's see if I. Oh, now it went away when I took my move my cursor. Never mind. That's so far. That's the most fascinating thing I've said in this.
If I can hear you've said a lot of great stuff.
Okay.
We, if I, I can, if I see us recording, so I think we're recording.
No, no,
Yep.
no. It was weird. The cursor was sitting right in front of my face, and there was a little blue thing that said mute. But then when I moved the cursor, it went away. Anyway, enough of that. What I wanted to get back to is when I was a young musician, I played lots of parties and weddings and all sorts of stuff. And I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy it. Now, it wasn't just a sense of ego, like, hey, you're talking while I'm playing. It had to do with the fact that the music was serving a different function. And again, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not what I was interested in. I was interested in connecting the music to the audience. In this case, it was ambient sound,
Yeah.
So I thought at the time, well, the problem is I'm not getting enough money. If I got paid more money, then it would be fine. I
Yeah.
wouldn't care about all the chatter. So I remember vividly, this is after years of doing this, I got called by an advertising agency to play a party, a private party, a tavern in the green in Central Park. And I don't remember, it was a long time ago, I remember what I got paid, but I asked for like double the most I ever got. And that was like, fine, no problem. So we knew that I was getting, a very substantial amount of money for very little work, by the way.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there playing. And of course, I can hardly hear myself. And I'm thinking, I'm still not having a good time. And it has nothing to do with the money. And I remember at that moment saying, I'm never doing this again. Now, I say this with all humility. It's like, it's nothing wrong in doing it. But for me, it was unsatisfying. I really wanted to make a connection to people listening to the music. And that was not the right place to do that. And so for me, my personal experience was, well, I'm not enjoying this. And so let somebody who enjoys it do it. And that's what I did.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that our I just like what I don't know if we can really give these people what they're looking for. I think they want classical guitar, but they really don't. They kind of want like maybe like a bossa nova
Yes,
player,
I was just going to
something
say
like,
that.
yeah, right. I
Yeah,
don't think
girl.
they really know what we do. So
Well,
they
I
go,
think
I
it's
want
different.
classical guitar. They just know they want a nylon string guitar
Yeah,
else.
I
And we get
think
there and we
when.
play Bach and they're like, what the hell is this?
What is that? Yeah. Well, I think it's, I mean, like weddings are more specific. I think sometimes couples actually know exactly, what kind of music they want. But if you're talking about a party, yeah, it's best to have a range of, some popular music and some real war horses, What's the I've forgotten the name of it now. Da 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 da. Romance Espanol or
Yeah,
something.
that one. They want that.
I don't know if this is a true story, but I was told that Narciso Yepes wrote that, and he wrote it for a film, and the film had some kind of sexual content. I think it was called something like Forbidden Games or something like that, and he didn't want any credit for it. It was just something he did as a gig, right? So that film came out with that music, and because the music was associated with sex. And it was a very cool piece, that piece became a huge hit, and I don't think he ever got a penny of royalties for
Because it says anonymous, doesn't it? Doesn't it say
Yes.
Romanza by
Y
Anonymous?
yes. Yes, but the story, and now I don't even remember where I heard the story. But it was kind of an inside thing at the time. It was someone in the biz that told me that,
So he
and
just didn't want his name on it because it was in porn, or.
well, it wasn't porn. It was an art film. It was a true, I don't remember the name of the, I actually, maybe, I think that might have been called Forbidden Games, but it was definitely not a porn film. It was a
So.
European art film.
Well, this is good. This is good. Now you're giving us some.
Now I'm
Well,
cooking,
first of
right?
all, you are already great. We already established that.
Yeah.
But this is good stuff. So you're saying that Romanza, perhaps maybe
I'm
the
pulling out the
third,
A material now.
I'm going to go ahead and call it the third most popular after maybe Recuerdos and Landa, the third most popular classical guitar, Spanish sounding thing we
I
play
would push back on
is
that.
from a
This may
porn
be the
flick.
most popular. There was certainly a time when it was number one. Now maybe it slipped
Well,
on the
it's
chart.
easier to play. You could play it, you could
That's
be an
right.
intermediate guitarist and play it. You can't be
That's
an
why I
intermediate
say it's
guitarist and
number
get through
one.
Recuerdos.
And now finish your. So you're saying that you're reiterating what I'm saying is that this was. Now I have to emphasize this was told to me by a someone in the music biz.
Who
I
did a
don't
lot of
remember who.
cocaine. A lot of cocaine.
That's, that may or may not be true, but it's really not relevant to the
Of course
story.
not. Of course not. No. No, it's not relevant.
No, it's not.
But so the person who wasn't doing so much cocaine told you
Yeah.
that Romanza was written by Francisco Yepes
Yeah.
and that he wrote it for a film called Hard Love. Or what was it? No, Love on the Hard. What was it? What was the name of this?
Well, there was for Forbidden Hard Games.
Forbidden. Forbidden. That's it. Not just hard games. So forbidden games is
Yes,
what we're gonna
Forbidden
call it.
Games,
We
right.
gotta look it up.
Yeah, look it up.
Who would know this? Who would know the answer to this?
Only me. Only
There's
me.
no like I mean there's like
No.
there's a couple of like English historians,
Yeah.
but they don't I mean I don't
Here's
know.
the beauty of this
What?
situation, Brett. You can ask me anything,
I want to ask you
and I
something
will
though.
answer it. Now, I may not know the answer, but I'm going to answer it no matter what.
Okay, well so first of all, we talked about your album in a spot that we did a couple of episodes ago, but that album, just to sort of just remind people of what it is, it's a sort of retrospective of your work that includes stuff that has either never been released or was released, and subsequently those record labels have gone down the same way like Telarc did. Same thing
Right.
happened to Elliot Fisk and his stuff,
Sure.
where you can't find that. I was looking for Scarlatti, him playing Scarlatti the other day. I could not, I mean, I could find him playing it, but I
Yeah.
couldn't find him playing the specific one
Right.
that I grew up listening to him
Yeah.
play. It's nowhere on the internet. It's nowhere. And a lot of that has to do with those record labels going down. And
That's right.
your most recent release, which about 4, 5, 6 months ago, was
Was in April, actually.
April. So I can't do month math right now, but
No, it's
is it
okay. Well, that was
September?
close. That
I'm
was
pretty
very
close.
close. Yeah.
So it's that's what that is. That's what's
Well,
going
no,
on there.
I would say that you were partially correct, but I have to, be specific here. There
Sure.
are three brand new pieces on it. One is called Renewal, which was written during the pandemic.
That's the one we played on the show. That's right.
Yeah. And then there's a piece that I wrote called Ballad for Astor Piazzolla. And then another piece, these are all new pieces called The Passionate Pilgrim. So those are newly written and newly recorded pieces. Then there are these, when I was in, I would say in the late 80s, 90s, early
Was
2000s.
the passionate, I hate to interrupt you,
Yeah.
was the Passionate Pilgrim also written for a porno flick
I saw this
the
coming.
same?
I saw this coming, and now I'm sorry I used that terminology,
When you
but
said Passionate Pilgrim,
yeah, it's
the fireworks
Brett.
went
I'm
off in
going
my
to try
heart.
to elevate the level of the show. The Passionate Pilgrim is a collection of poetry written by and also collected. He collected other poets. His name was, you may have heard of him, Billy Shakespeare, also known as William
The
Shakespeare.
little Billy Shitpants.
Wow, you're a tough act here. So,
I'm sorry. Maestro, maestro, please forgive
yeah,
me.
Passionate
Continue.
Pilgrim Shakespeare,
Yes.
okay? Not porno Shakespeare.
Straight up,
Just want
straight
to
up
straighten
Shakespeare.
you out on that, as
Yeah.
it were.
Yeah.
Okay?
In the
So
poem.
those are brand new. All right? Now, one of the pieces that I wrote when I was about 30, which was kind of a breakthrough piece for me, is called Trilogy. And it really was a very athletic piece, and also really incorporated for the first time for me anyway, elements of jazz, harmony, and rhythms. And that kind of put me on the map in a certain sense. So that was record the album was called Trilogy, and the like wall vinyl albums, you know, some of them were digitized, and but that wasn't, and so it was gone. And other guitarists have recorded Trilogy, but I thought this would be a great opportunity, you know, to bring it back and have it digitally remastered. And when we did, you know, it was recorded so beautifully back then. The only problem was when you take something that was recorded with analog, you know, you get that analog hiss.
Yes.
You know, for the tape hiss. But of course they have programs now, and we completely removed the hiss, and it really is, it sounds, I think it sounds just absolutely beautiful. So that's from 40 years ago. So that's like meeting a whole new public now. Now the other remaining material, there are three songs that my wife Leslie sings that are based on Shakespeare also. And then there are these pieces that I wrote and recorded because I had a studio when I was doing music for TV. So sometimes late at night, I would just pick up the guitar and start to play and hit the record button. And I captured, you know how you can capture things like lightning in a bottle? It's like, wow, that was, if only I had that recorded. Well, I had a recorder, so I recorded those things. But they were never released in anything. So those are on the album too. So you have brand new, you have the oldest stuff, and then the stuff in between that hasn't been released. And I don't want to, you know, look, yeah. There's so many great artists, so I don't want to sound like a buffoon, all right? But this may be the greatest album ever recorded, ever. Okay? It might be.
Of the greatest pieces.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ever written.
I hope I'm not overstating the case.
I know. I think people should go pick it up. Pick it up at their local record store.
It's distributed by Naxos. It's on the Reentrant label, which is a division of New Focus Records. And it's you can stream it in all the usual places, and it's available on Amazon.
It is beautiful. I have heard it. I have listened to several times, as I always do with your music. You know, you're one of the biggest influences on me. By far, maybe, you know, if I think about it, I'm composing, you know, now, you know that.
I do know that.
And that's what you do.
Well, now I'm decomposing, actually.
let's get on to that, you know, one of the things that, you know, we wanted to talk about was sort of that a major career change has happened. We're not calling it, I have mistakenly called it a retirement several times.
Yeah.
You are not retiring.
Well, you know,
for Manus,
yes,
Manus is done, and we were going to talk about that.
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about that. You know, it's funny because when I retired from Manus, people said, "Oh, so now you're retired," and I guess I shouldn't have taken offense at that. But you know, for a musician, doesn't really retire. You know,
but you also left Purchase. You also kind of like, you know,
I had taught at Bennington. I taught at many colleges.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have wonderful CUNY Graduate Center. I have wonderful memories and experiences. But jobs are for, well, Manus, by the way, I did that for 49 years. So that was the one constant. Well, I taught in these other places for 15 years and 14 years and this and that. Man. But I was going to say jobs have a certain kind of life. And it's determined often that life or the shape of it is determined by factors that you don't control. In this case, it was the pandemic, because what happened was, I won't be shy about saying this. In 2015, we got, I think it was then, maybe even earlier than that, we got a new dean at the college. And what I would say is he was indifferent to the guitar program. He was not against it, but he wasn't going to support it really. And so when someone is in that position, making decisions about how much scholarship money, you know, and stuff like that, and they're not supportive of a program, what happens eventually is the program kind of, by attrition, it dies out. Because if you're a young musician and you're auditioning for Manus and Manhattan and Juilliard and Eastman and Manus offers you half as much, you know, as these other schools, well, you know, that one can't compete with that. So Manus was, you know, going down in terms of enrollment. And then the pandemic hit, and that really hurt a lot of schools and a lot of programs. And if you had a program that was vulnerable, like the Manus guitar program, then, because the last year, and I only retired last year from Manus, I was teaching all four of the remaining guitar students, and they all graduated. So
Michael didn't have any students.
He did not have any students that year.
How does he not have any students when he's the one running the whole that symposium or whatever it's called these days?
Well, you know,
was huge.
And absolutely,
not that long ago.
Right. No. Well, it's a great question. I think the thing about the Manus Summer Guitar Workshop, that the prime, I would say, clientele for that was not necessarily people going about to go to college. Not that there weren't college age students there, but you know, there were a lot of amateur guitarists of various ages. Mm-hmm. So it isn't like an organic thing that they would then apply to the Manus College of Music to study in the college. However, you know, look, over the years, he's had this many students and I've had this many students, and it would fluctuate. The students that I would have, not completely, but greatly so, they were attracted to studying with me because I also wrote and arranged music, and they had that interest themselves.
Yeah.
So Michael usually was more handling the more traditional people who were interested in more traditional repertoire. And this is a gross generalization because we both did everything, you know.
Yeah, when I was around, it wasn't like, you know, you didn't just teach people that wanted to write.
No,
music.
I never did. I never just taught people that were interested. It wasn't like that. But you know, and you know this from your own experience, whatever it is about the guitar that people are attracted to studying it. A lot of people who pick up the guitar are also very creative and want to not only play written repertoire, but want to compose or arrange. It seems to be something it's not necessarily unique to the guitar, but it is more, let's say, the guitar than if you were a flutist or someone who played a single line instrument.
Right.
You know, because you could actually create, you know, harmony and melody and rhythms and counterpoint on the guitar, which is kind of miraculous when you think we only have four fingers on our left hand to do all that work with thumb being planted behind the neck. It's pretty amazing what can be done on a guitar.
The people who write the best for the guitar, in my opinion, are the people that play the guitar.
Sure.
So I've never been like the biggest fan of the Nocturne. I've never been the biggest fan of like Corleano's pieces for it. I like the people that played the guitar. Yeah. And those are the people that write effectively for it and sort of know how to do what needs to be done on it. They aren't just sort of like, I don't know. It's important that students are doing that and that you're teaching students to do that and that Ben Verdery is there for them as a resource too.
Well, I want to just say something about what you just said, because I agree with you that if you're a guitarist, you can write more effectively. Effectively meaning it's guitaristic. It lays on the instrument.
Idiomatic.
You can write more effectively than a non-guitarist. On the other hand, okay, that there are non-guitarists, composers, who by not understanding the guitar, they are not restricted in their thinking. And so it's like, well, why not this? Why not that? And very often they work in conjunction, like they'll write something for a performer and I'll say, well, what about this? And whoever it is they're working will say, well, I can't really play that, but I can play something similar to it. How about this? I go, oh, yeah, that's great. So you understand what I'm saying is that by not being a guitarist, sometimes that makes you less encumbered by all sorts of thoughts about what's possible.
Yeah. Well, I think my main point is that there's not a lot of infrastructure out there for people that want to get a degree in composition on the guitar.
That's true.
It's like the guitar. If you're going to go to school for guitar, you're supposed to be, unless you're going to Manus, you're supposed to be some sort of a competition, you know, guy.
Well, I know what you're saying.
Or you're a composer. And the composers have all these beautiful instruments they can work with.
Sure.
And we have this very difficult instrument to work with that has a limited audience base,
I think that there are enough guitarist performers or guitarist composers performers around these days that if that's your interest, then you study with one of those people. And I say that because I think also you can take composition separately. I think it's important to study composition away from the guitar.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just get too bound up in all the limitations of the guitar, you know, and you need to learn more about music than just the guitar. I think one of the things that, you know, early on when I was a teenager that turned me off about becoming a classical guitarist rightly or wrongly, I said, well, you know, I'm listening to my friends playing Beethoven and Brahms and Bach, and where is that on the guitar? You know, where's that literature? And so I felt that the guitar, and you know, to be fair, a lot of great music has been written for the guitar since I was a teenager, okay? But not by Bach or Brahms or, you know, Schubert or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think that to just focus on just the guitar and composition is a mistake for a composer. They need to study composition in addition to how that works on the guitar. And for writing for the guitar, they should study with someone who writes for the guitar. There are lots of guys around that do that now. Well, several anyway.
Yeah, there are several. But I do have a little bit of concern for that, because I think okay. that there are, oh no, it's okay. I mean, I don't want to, you know, whatever. Obviously you guys are there, but I didn't feel when I was at Manus that that was necessarily something we could have done. You know
really?
What I mean?
Oh,
yeah,
so
I mean,
sorry.
I'm just being like, I'm not trying to be honest. I'm just saying, like, I thought that maybe it was just me and sort of coming from Texas, which was more of a traditional program.
I think
sort
so.
Of coming like a program like this, I just thought, like, oh, I don't know if I can write, you know, and I think that a lot of
well, that's very different.
There's not a lot of encouragement for people to write.
You know, it's very different. I would say this. I'm thinking about it now from the teaching angle.
Yeah.
You know, you come and you start the year. Who do I have? Who am I teaching? Oh, there's this guy, Brett Williams. Okay.
I didn't write back then. There was no reason for you to think I wrote. So this
yeah,
is an
exactly.
attack on you.
So I would say, Brett, what are you interested in? Right. And you would say, yeah. well, this is what I did. And so I would take it from you. I would take the clues from you. If you had said, now, let yeah. me preface this by saying this. Anyone teaching at a place like Manus or Manhattan or anything, mm-hmm. there is a certain expectation, not necessarily just from the teacher, but also like a level, mm-hmm. someone, a master student at a top-notch conservatory or any good program would yeah. be expected to play equivalent literature. Like you don't, nothing, yeah. not that there's anything wrong with Lagrima, but you know, that would not be like a master's level piece, right?
Right.
So you expect that. Once those kind of, or a Bach, let's say you'd be expected to play a Bach suite, but once those expectations are accomplished, I always say, well, what else are you interested in? Oh, you're interested in writing? Well, let me see your work. And very often what happens with people who haven't written before, they say, well, I'm working on this thing that I wrote. And I say, well, where's the music? I say, well, I've never written it down.
Yeah,
so,
that's
well,
a problem.
Write it down. Because in the process of writing it down, you start to say, oh, my God, like I didn't realize, oh, that's a triplet? Oh, Jesus. You know, you learn a lot by notating your own music. And so anyway, I'm just saying that's something that would naturally happen with my students. And if it didn't happen with you, I'm so sorry, but you would have had,
you
would have
be
been the one to initiate that. You know?
No, that makes, I mean, I came to you and I was like, oh, I'm playing Barrios. Help me with it. Like it's not,
that's
it,
right. That's
and
right.
So this is not, it's, but I think that there isn't, so, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe people can help me on this, but I don't see programs that are devoted. In other words, if you are getting your master's, you've got 2 years to complete two recitals, mm-hmm. be in several ensembles,
mm-hmm.
and then that's it. That's the
yeah.
structure, and everything
yeah.
else is great.
But you know what?
Like,
I would
you know
say this,
saying?
And
what?
I could be wrong on this, but I would say this. Schools
yeah.
need students, you know? So yeah. it's a buyer's market. So if you went to a school and you were of a sufficient level of performance or playing,
yeah.
and you said, but what I'm interested in doing in my master's is pursuing composition on the guitar.
Yeah.
And I want to play my own music and I want to play my own whatever, or some combination of that with traditional literature.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would find you would have some open arms for that. Not maybe not every place, you know, some places
yeah.
would say, you know, this actually goes to another thing, which is teaching philosophy. One teaching philosophy is this is what we teach. This is our program. We're going to plug you into this program and this
right.
curriculum. It doesn't matter whether you like it or you don't like it. This is what it is.
Right.
You don't have to take it, but that's what we do here. That, and I'm not knocking that. That's a legitimate way to go about it, right? Another way would be to say, well, what you do has to be of a sufficient level. But if you're interested in composing, well, then you should take a minor in composition, and
yeah.
absolutely you'll be able to perform your works here in conjunction with, Other pieces, tradition, more traditional, let's say, pieces. And if you wanted to do it solely your own compositions, then you would be like any other composition student. We'd say, well, where's your portfolio of compositions? Where are your scores? You'd have to have a body of work. You can't just go into a master and say, well, I never done it before, but
So
I
that's
want to
gotta be
do it now.
that's gotta be that's because that's looking back on it, that's kind of the thing. When you're dealing with 18, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, the idea that they would have all the enormous amount of skills that you need to do these auditions, which when I was a kid, the auditions were all a Renaissance piece, romantic era piece, like at the, I don't know, and then
And a
modern
modern
piece.
piece.
A modern piece,
Right.
and then you're good to go. But so if that's the demand, and then they are also supposed to have a body of work. I'm just saying, like, I don't think
No,
I'm
I've
not. This isn't about me. This is about
yeah.
just me sort of thinking about the future of the programs. You're dealing with a program, and you're not the only one. You just left a school that once was,
It was the
and not that
first.
long ago,
It was the
once.
f it was the first
It was the first
school.
guitar program in the United States.
Right.
And the first, like, accredited, you could get a
Sure.
bachelor's in
Yeah.
guitar for the first time at
That's right.
Manus. And when I was going there, there were a couple of us that were pretty good, pretty
Yeah.
competitive.
Absolutely.
And, I chose to go there. A lot of other people chose to go there for whatever reasons. But now it's gone, essentially.
Well, I'm not saying that. Brett, I don't know. It's been a year since I've been there. When I left, there were literally no guitar students signed up. Now, what's happened since then? I don't know. There may be three or four students there now. There may be none. There may be two. I don't know.
Because if another dean comes in, then it's different. What about that
Well,
Lester guy?
not necessarily. Not
He
necessarily.
supported you guys, right? Dean Lester?
Yes. Yes.
He gave
He,
you
yeah.
money.
Yes,
'Cause I
not me
got
per
money.
not hey, not me personally.
No, but I'm just saying, that's one of the things is if you're right. If you don't have money and your competition is Yale, Juilliard, and the Manhattan School of Music, and they're
And San
giving people
Francisco
money,
Conservatory and Peabody, and
not to
you
mention
go
all
on
the other
and
schools, right?
yeah. No,
You
you
can't
have
not
to.
give musicians money to go to school.
No, you have to. You have to be competitive. Now, I would have to say that there was an argument that they presented. But it was not a compelling argument. The argument was, well, we don't have to compete with these other conservatories
Where was this
because,
argument made? Like what, in an office or?
yes,
Okay.
yes.
No, I just wanted to know. I wanted a picture.
Yeah, you got a picture? I had a, I think I had a cappuccino that I was drinking at the time, but I
Okay.
wasn't the one making the argument. The argument was, we are the new school. And because we're the new school, and I can't emphasize enough the word new, right? We don't need to compete with the other schools. And the reason for that is because we're not like them, Brett. We're new. Do you get what I'm saying? Did I make the point? We're
Yes.
new.
Right.
This turned out not to be such a compelling argument to the people auditioning. Who found out that, well, you could study new music anywhere.
Right.
And maybe it's not the most important thing to combine basket weaving with rocket telemetry with Schenkerian analysis. That might not be such a compelling. It's new.
Interdisciplinary,
It's
right.
new, you know. Anyway.
Well, so that was their idea, was that they were like, we're not going to do
That
so
seemed to be
much.
the pitch. That seemed to be the
So it wasn't
pitch.
against guitar, it was against traditional instruction.
They wanted to push the boundaries, and as you said, interdisciplinary courses. They wanted to push the boundaries of conservatory teaching and open it up in a way. And all of that is fine. And in fact, I proposed some extensive stuff. But really, and I hate to say this, but what I found was then there was no meat on the bones. It was more of a marketing. It was marketing, you know.
Yeah, that sounds, it sounds like bullshit.
Bullshit is another way to say it.
You can't just say new. It's like, what does that mean?
Exactly. we're on the same
They keep on
frequency
saying it.
here.
They keep on saying, like, we're new. Look at me in
Yeah.
the eyes.
Look,
New.
Did you
No.
are you getting what that means?
What does it mean? But you're still playing like,
Yeah,
trumpets and
we don't, you
bassoons.
know, we're beating a dead horse here.
Those aren't new.
Obviously, I had some differences with them,
Right.
and I told him, and I'm not kidding, at that meeting, I said, if you do this, meaning
Yeah.
not competing, then this is what's going to happen. By attrition, the program will die out. And that's what happened. It took 5 or 6 years, you know.
So there,
Now,
go
let me
ahead.
just say this. I
Sorry.
don't know what's going on there now, so I don't want to give your listeners the idea there's no guitar program there. But one of the things they did, and rightly so, when the enrollment went way down, they canceled all the classes. So there was no more guitar ensemble because there's nobody to play in the ensemble. There's no more guitar survey, which covered all sorts of other things like writing for the guitar and arranging for the guitar and figured bass and all sorts of stuff
Awesome.
like that. And there was no guitar performance class. Well, right there, that's like about 5 or 6 hours of class, guitar specific to guitar class time that got canceled. Now, whether they what they've done to replace that in the curriculum again, I don't know. But I felt with the pandemic and all, and I had been there, as I say, 49 years, maybe this was a good time to step away from it, you know. And you know, maybe it can be rebuilt and maybe not. Everything has a life, you know? And so if maybe the life of the program is that's what it was, and okay, there are other places, you know, one can study. And if you can still study there, that's great too, you know?
I mean, studying is all about the teacher.
It is.
So
It is.
it's
I
not,
couldn't
you
agree with
know,
you more. It
yeah.
is really about that. It really
So
is.
they can package it however they want, but they need to have the teacher that people want to study with. And maybe that's
That's true.
Joao, you know,
Yeah,
in the future.
that could be.
But it's like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I kind of get where they were coming from in the sense that like something's got to give. Something, you know, we want to do something about this issue of people not studying things that are lucrative or I don't know. There's all sorts of, you know, things that are thrown at studying music or studying the arts that I've been on one side of it on, and then now I'm kind of on the other side of thinking, no, I greatly value it because the conversations that I have about music, the way I think about music, is completely different than people who didn't study it.
Sure.
And it's even different than people who didn't go on to get an advanced degree in it. It's just, you
Sure.
know, it's a different relationship with the art form that I value.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the great tensions, which I'm sure, well, we've all experienced this in any of the art forms. We're, you know, associated with classical guitar, but it's no different if you were a painter, if you were a philosopher, if you're a French literature major. It's like the tension between studying something that you love and then, well, how do I make a living out of that? You know, that's a very real tension because you're at that age where you're going to be graduating. First of all, how do you pay off your loans? And then how do I have a career? And, you know, it's not a new problem.
No.
And in a way, and it's taken me some time to reflect on this, it's confusing things. Art is not, the purpose of art is not meant to generate income.
Yes.
That's not what art is,
Yeah,
you know.
that's
It
true.
just
Yes.
simply isn't. And in fact, some societies recognize that, and as a result, because they're civilized, they actually support the arts
Right.
through programs, all
Right.
right? And enable artists because they appreciate not only, you know, the obvious value of art, but the value to the community in that it lifts everybody up. Everybody
Yeah.
who's participating in art, you know? I mean, like, for instance, and I don't know this firsthand, but I had a friend that went to Bali. And in Bali, he said, everybody is a musician. And whatever it is they do in life, at a certain time of day, they all stop and they go and they play in the orchestra,
In the
you know?
gamelan or
Yeah,
whatever?
gamelan, right, exactly. And it's beautiful. Think about it. The whole village comes together and they play music every day. I mean, it's fabulous. So there are certain societies that recognize it. In the society that we're living in right now, it's very tough. And it wasn't easy when I was of age, you know, when I was a college student. But I'd say it's much more difficult now.
Well, it's difficult, but I think just complaining about it is something that, you know, we can all do. But I do think that that's something that I want people to understand, is that this is not a degree that you're going to get, and then you're going to take those, maybe you'll take the skills in some abstract way, but you're definitely not going to, there's not going to be a direct relationship between your ability to play scales quickly and making a bunch of fucking money. Like, those two things are totally unrelated.
Okay,
You know,
so
I think it's
let
important
me give the
for
good
people
news.
to
Let me give
do.
some good news,
We have a
okay?
lot of good news to give. I'm
Yeah, we
having a
have a
good
lot of good
time with
news.
this
So
instrument.
the good news is that you are learning an art and a craft and connecting deeply with something in your soul that you will have for the rest of your life, if you choose to have it for the rest of your life, that is invaluable and could sustain you through the worst of times. I'm not kidding about that. That is the gift of it, all right? How one translates that, or not even translate that, into income, into making money there, I have seen now through hundreds and hundreds of students a wide variety from everything being all in musician to having a day job to everything in between. And oftentimes it's nothing that could have been predicted because, you know, doors open up for people in various ways. I had one student, this is not a joke. She was from Alabama and a good student, nice player, but in her middle age, I'd say, she discovered a talent that she had. And don't ask me to explain this because it's mystifying. She seemed to have a feel for when the price of precious metals was going to go up or down. And this gift that she had seemed was apparently very valuable to certain large firms that trade in precious metals. And she became like hugely successful as a I don't know what her title is, but that's what she would do. She would advise them on placing bets on whether the price of copper or tin
Well,
or
that's Giacomo, same thing. Giacomo isn't
there
making
you
money with
go.
guitar. He's making it with Amazon, sort of like
Yeah, and
speculative purchases through.
who would have thought, you know, and who
Never.
could have foreseen that? And so what I'm saying is we have talents that we don't even know about or don't even come to fruition when
You
we're 20.
went to school, you went to college, correct me if I'm wrong, and we are running a little low on time, and I want to tell you something before we go too.
Okay.
But you went to school with the guy who designed Trivial Pursuit.
Well, I didn't go to school with him. His name is David Walbert, okay? And the student who I was just talking about, the precious metals person,
Alabama
was
girl, yeah.
Alabama, was his student.
What do
So
you mean
and
his
so
student?
was David Walbert's student. David Walbert didn't go to Manners, though.
Okay.
He's the one who invented Trivial Pursuit, and he
Yeah.
became, I'm sure, quite wealthy from doing that. David was a very good guitarist.
So a
Anyway,
classical guitarist invented Trivial Pursuit.
correct. That's correct.
You hear that, people? So who would have known? Hey, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
Yeah,
that's the
who would
thing.
have figured, right?
So what's going on with you though? Are you everything is going really well, right? I mean, you seem incredibly healthy and sort of just well. You seem
Wow.
active. You seem
Yes.
active.
Yeah, well, you know
You
what?
seem like you've been working today.
Remember when my phone went off a little while ago? I'm quite sure what that was. That was my cousin asking me if I want to swim today. Now, I have to tell you, I have an incredible situation. I love to swim. And the best thing you would think would be to have your own pool, right? Wouldn't you say that's the best thing? You'd swim whatever you want,
If you're
right?
a swimmer, yeah, that's like the
Okay,
dream.
well, it turns out it's not the best thing. The best thing is if your next door neighbor has a great pool, which he does, and he says, swim anytime. That's the best thing.
That
You
is the
get it?
best thing.
You get
And then you get to pee in the pool.
No. That's disgusting. You
Okay.
don't pee in the pool. There's no reason to do that.
Thought that was just because I don't swim a lot, but
Well, it's
that's
a
what I
great
do.
form of exercise.
It
It
is.
really is.
I know that you do it. You have like buddies that you do it with. You have
Well,
like people that you
my
know.
cousin lives across the street. Do you believe
Oh
that? Of
man,
all the
that's.
houses we looked at 70 houses, and we wind up finding a house right across the street from my cousin.
And you are in Woodstock.
I am in Woodstock, yes.
Man, that's
But I grew
amazing.
up in Brooklyn, and I consider myself a city boy, you know?
I think so. Are you
You can
keeping up
take
with?
the you can take the boy out of the city, but you can't take the city
Are
out of
you
the boy.
keeping up with the Mets? I know that you don't watch that much baseball, but I thought that
Well,
you chose them
I'm
after the
watching the
Dodgers.
Mets. I'm also watching the Yankees.
Both are
But
doing
I'll tell you what
incredible.
I'm watching right now, the
What?
U.S. Open. Oh
Okay.
my God. Have you been watching that or
No,
no?
I don't watch balls like soccer balls and hockey pucks and things that go back and basketball. I can't watch things that go back and forth endlessly. So I need to watch football or baseball.
Yeah, because they don't go back and forth
They don't
endlessly.
go, no, they stop. And then I get to go, okay, what's going to happen next? When
Okay.
something just goes back and
Yeah.
forth,
See, now here's
I
where
go to
you and I are
sleep.
quite different. Yeah, I love baseball, but I can't watch a baseball game from beginning to
Most people
end
can.
because for me it's like watching paint dry, you know?
Oh God, I love that
But
tension.
or grass grow. But I will go between, let's say, the Mets game and the Yankees game and the U.S. Open, and you know,
Oh, so you
I'm
got
a
cable.
I do have cable, yeah.
Oh, Fred, give me your password.
Oh sure, here
Come
I'll
on.
tell you what it is. I'm gonna give it to you right now. I want you
All
to
the
write it
listeners,
down.
every
You
classical
ready?
guitarist has.
Everybody, here's the password.
Here it is.
No way.
No way, Brett. Well, Fred, I had obviously the best time. You are the only person that I've had on the show wittingly. I don't know if you know this, but I had this wonderful composer on once, twice on accident. But you are the first person that I have had
Well, it was
wittingly on
intentional.
the. It was
Intentional.
an intentional, right?
Well, I should say congratulations to myself.
You should. You are the only person that I would do this with. I want everybody out there to understand that this is not what I'm going to be doing now, but I
Well,
am doing it with Fred because I just like talking to Fred all the time. Not that I don't like talking to the rest of you, but I
I
like
love
talking to Fred.
talking to you,
Probably the
Brett.
best.
I love talking to you. Thank you so much. What I would say is, aren't you concerned about running out of people eventually to
I
talk to
already
if you?
have. I already
Oh,
have. And the
really?
other thing is that I think that there's other. I know that there's other classical guitar podcasts, and I think that, I think that it used to be where I went. It's been through a couple of things. When I first started, people were like, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't want to. Please stop emailing me." They didn't know what a podcast was in 2000 and, nine, 10, whatever. Then I started doing it, and people were like, "Oh, this is great. This is like the new thing. I'm real excited. Of course, I want to be on it." And now it's sort of to the point where I think they're probably getting hit up a lot, and I'm not hearing from people unless their publicist
Yes.
reaches out. And
Sure.
that's how I had Anna Vidovic on recently,
Right.
Milos, all these other people that,
Right.
are sort of big. It's their
Yeah.
publicists just look at what's going on and reach out. But when I reach out to people, like I used to be able to get a hold of Pepe Romero. I used to like be able to email him directly. I can't find him now. His whatever cousin or whoever's running his show,
Yeah.
they won't even respond. So it's like I think that there's in same thing with David Russell. It's like I just can't get to him anymore like I used to. Maybe it'll change. Maybe it's just, with the pandemic, people are sort of burnt out on having these conversations online. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's I don't
The
know about
listenership
the,
is bigger than it's ever been,
well,
so
that's great. That's great. I actually I believe just because I hired her, my publicist reached out to you as well, even though she maybe didn't
That's
know that I
right.
knew you. But it is kind of the way it is right now. If you have something to promote, I'm not saying you have to hire a publicist, but the last album that I did before this, I didn't hire a publicist, and it came and went very quickly. And I hired a very good publicist this time, and I have to say, the thing, like for instance, NPR, syndicated broadcast, and Sirius Radio, and a whole bunch of other things as well. That wouldn't happen without a publicist. And what I'm saying is, there are so many people vying for attention now that they're inundated. People get inundated with requests for this, that, and the other. So very often, you have to, someone like you would have to go through a third party, to make something with someone like Pepe or David Russell. It's not unusual, is what I'm saying. I wouldn't take any of it personally.
No, I don't take it personally because these are both people that I've had good discussions with
Great.
before. And
Well, then
so
I'm
I,
sure
but
you
I,
will
I
again.
think, yeah, no, I think it's just a matter of everybody has access to info at davidrussell.com. You know what I mean? Like,
Right, sure.
so it's, I think it's just kind of like and it's easier than ever to do a podcast. But I don't know. I'm having a good time.
Well,
I
you
had a
look
good time
great, and
today.
I really do think
Thank you.
that the best news in everything we discussed is that you're engaged.
I'm
And
excited about it. I've
I
never
think
been
that's
married, so
wonderful.
this will, we're going to see how this one goes.
Great.
You like it. You love Leslie. You've
Well, you
had the
know what?
time of your
Yes,
life with that woman.
that's right. You know what? And next, well, in 2 weeks, we're going to celebrate our 30th anniversary.
30th.
Yeah,
Wow.
yeah.
Oh, so that means you were only together like 10 or 15 years when I met you guys.
That's right. She's
You
my
guys were like
second wife.
a young couple.
That's right.
All right. Well, congratulations on the new album.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
on 30 years with Leslie.
Thank you.
And Fred, we will talk again very soon. Liz actually has an interview that she has to get in the office for. So that's the only reason I'm getting off, or I would have just kept on going. I think we could have filled 2 hours.
Another 2 hours, easily.
Okay, pal.
Okay, Brett, be well.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for joining me and Fred. And I will see you next time with a new guest. It's a new season. Let's do this by seasons. We'll basically have a fall season and a spring season. How's that sound? That sounds fair. Make sure you donate to the show, BrettWilliamsMusic.com/support. That's BRET1T and Brett, BrettWilliamsMusic.com/support. And go to Savage, go to the Florida Guitar Festival, and enjoy your fall. It's officially fall. See you guys soon.